welcome to WhiskeyCast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 61 for October 8th, 2006. Coming up in a few minutes.
It's a lot of fun, and from my point of view, well, there's only two of us here, Paul Monks and myself. We do it all at the moment. But the way I see it, that if it doesn't work, well, we can certainly drown our sorrows at the end of the day. So, we'll be happy whichever way we go.
That's Patrick McGuire, the master distiller at Australia's Tasmania Distillery, the home of Sullivan Cove Single Malt. We'll hear more from Patrick in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. The rumors about a sale of White and Mackay just keep going. On Thursday, the Times of India cited sources inside Vijay Mallya's United Spirits in reporting that United had reached a deal to buy White and Mackay for £400 million. The next day, a White and Mackay spokesman told The Scotsman that there is no deal, but admitted that offers have been received from a number of bidders for parts of the business. The spokesman says any decision on a sale won't happen for at least 2 weeks. Now let's get to the fun stuff. This past week brought word of a bunch of new whiskey releases in the UK and Kentucky. Buffalo Trace unveiled the 2006 Antique Collection, including the annual George T. Stagg Bourbon, weighing in at a whopping 70.3% alcohol by volume. The collection also includes the latest W.L. Weller Bourbon, a 17-year-old Eagle Rare Single Barrel, the Sazerac Rye 18-year-old, and a new unfiltered, uncut rye whiskey, the Thomas H. Handy Straight Rye. The collection will be available later this month. Gordon & MacPhail has released 11 new vintage single malts. 9 are from Glen Grant Distillery, and the youngest was distilled in 1968. The oldest dates back to 1948. The other two complete Gordon & MacPhail's Spey Malt from Macallan Distillery range, with bottlings from 1938 and 1950. If you thought the 1965 Ardbeg was pricey, just wait. The 1938 Spey Malt will sell for £3,500 a bottle. At current exchange rates, that's $6,550. A presentation case with Spey malts, including the new 1950, and bottlings from 1987, 1973, 1966, and 1940 will sell for £4,500, or about $8,400. Finally, Diageo has announced the latest special releases in its Classic Malts series, with 3 30-year-old malts from Brora, Talisker, and Lagavulin. Just 2,300 bottles of the Lagavulin 30 will be available at a suggested retail price of £210, or $395. There will also be a 27-year-old Port Ellen, a 25-year-old Talisker, a 12-year-old Lagavulin, a 20-year-old Dalwhinnie, and a 17-year-old Craganmore in the series, and the most unusual, an 8-year-old Kalila. This one had its debut at the Islay Festival of Malt and Music this summer. What makes it different from the other Kalila expressions? This one was made with unpeated malt. We'll have more details on all of these whiskeys in coming weeks. Coming up on the calendar of events, next weekend is Whiskey Live Toronto, and the next episode of WhiskeyCast will come from Toronto. If you enjoyed the last episode on Sweden's love of whiskey, next weekend is also the Malmö Whiskey Festival in Ulf Buxrud's hometown of Malmö, Sweden. The following weekend is the Milano Whiskey Festival in Milano, Italy, and the Wild Weekend Whiskey 2006 in Nykøbing Falster, Denmark. And the last weekend of the month is the Whiskey Weekend Bremen 2006 in Bremen, Germany. Of course, there's a complete list of whiskey events on the WhiskeyCast website, www.whiskeycast.com. In the last episode, I talked with whiskey lovers in Sweden, and to prove that the love of good whiskey knows no boundaries, this time around we'll go to literally the other side of the earth. I talked with Patrick McGuire, who manages the Tasmania Distillery, named after the Australian island where it's located.
Well, it was something that happened probably back in the 80s. A few friends... We had a little hotel on top of a little ski mountain that we have here, and we used to drink a little bit of whiskey as we knocked off, the end of the day or at 4 o'clock in the morning when we were cleaning up the pub. We'd always have a little shot of whiskey to help us get through that little bit. And a few of us got to thinking that it'd be a good idea if, why can't we produce our own whiskey here in Australia, particularly in Tasmania, which is a similar sort of latitude to Britain or to Scotland. So we grow a lot of barley here. Our water is very, very clean. It's got a good reputation for very clean, soft water here. So, and we also make very good beer here. So some of Australia's sort of best beers are brewed here in Tassie. So all the ingredients are there. It was just a matter of doing it. But then we discovered that the laws didn't allow us to do it, at least not in a small way to start with. So a guy by the name of Bill Lark went to see some senators here in Australia and explained the situation. They had the laws changed, and then in the early 90s, the laws were changed, and the Larks set up their own distillery, and that was under the house in their home. In a very small way, they had a little 20-litre still, and it grew from there. And I became involved in it through Bill, who was a partner of mine in this pub, and very good friends of ours, Bill and Lynn Lark. And I ended up working at this distillery, the Tasmania Distillery, which came along in the mid-90s. A different fellow set that up. I came along as a distiller in 1999. And then within a couple of years, I ended up managing that. And then a couple of years later, myself and a few others bought the distillery from the second lot owners. So it's just sort of grown from there.
So there's actually two distilleries, right?
Well, now there's three distilleries that are operating and producing single malt whiskey. And there is another two in the pipeline, so I understand, in Tasmania. So all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, it's taken, quite a number of years. It's taken 10 years to get this far, but there is a growing interest in producing high-quality single malt whiskey here in Tasmania. There's also another one in Melbourne, that's a small one, and one in Western Australia, just down near Perth. So there is now, as wineries and the vineyards have grown in Australia, we've sort of realised that there are other things that we can do, I guess. So that's what we're doing.
So tell me about the whiskey. How is it?
Well, it's good. I mean, some of the early whiskey that we was produced by the original owner wasn't the best necessarily, but a bit later on we learned a hell of a lot. We improved what we were doing, and now our whiskies are winning awards. So we've won gold, silver, bronze medals and awards. And that's up against some of the best Scotch malts you can get. And ours are at quite a young age. So we are very confident that we're producing a single malt whiskey that is as good as anything you'll get from anywhere else in the world. So, we feel that what we've got here is an excellent product.
And that's the Sullivan's Cove, right?
That's the Sullivan's Cove, yes.
Because I know you mentioned that the original distiller didn't do too well. I'd heard some comments about the original Sullivan's Cove that weren't very flattering. But you guys have fixed
it,
right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think we have. I agree with that, that some of the early whiskey that was put out wasn't very good at all. But there's a few reasons for that. One is, I guess, the distilling methods weren't that well understood. And also, it was put out far too young. But in the early days, the guy had to make some money, so he did what he could. But now we have the luxury of time. We've got whiskey now that's 8 years old. It's one of these things that you've got to start somewhere. Mistakes will be made, but you can always improve on that. And, I think a lot of things start out like that, but we've learned a lot, and we're still learning. But I'm very confident that what we have, and through these awards and medals that we've won, and incidentally they've been through blind tastings too. They're not they're not ones where the judges have known what they were drinking. So, you know, to win medals like that is an indication to me that we're on the right track.
Now, you source your barley locally, right?
That's right. All our barley is grown in Tasmania only. We don't get it from anywhere else. And it is local water as well, mostly drawn from the catchment area around Mount Wellington, which is the mountain that sits behind Hobart.
Now, where do you get your barrels from?
Where do we get our barrels? Well, we a couple of different places. Mostly, we get Jack Daniel's barrels from the bourbon barrels from the United States. And we also use some French oak export barrels that we get from South Australia that have port matured them in them in the past. But they're the two types of casks that we tend to use.
Is there any Australian wood you can use for your barrels?
No, there doesn't seem to be. I mean, we've had a good look at that over time, but the type of wood that's required, as I'm sure you're aware, has to be the right type. It can't be porous and all these things. It has to be allowed to breathe, and the oils and tannins in the wood have to be right. And a lot of Australian timbers just don't seem to have what we're looking for. And we've asked a lot of people about this because we think it would be a great thing to do. But so far, nobody's come up with any sort of timber that we could use that wouldn't... what we're... The eucalypts and things would give it a far too strong a eucalypt sort of flavour, and we don't want that sort of thing to happen.
I can understand that. Mm. Now, how's your sales going outside of Australia?
Well, it's just starting. I mean, we've had to. It's been a long process. We've had to wait a number of years for our good whiskey to mature, and we're just starting to get there with that now. We have. Part of our ownership operates in Asia and also in Europe and in the States. They are setting up, our sort of bigger shareholders are setting up offices now, sales offices for their businesses that they operate in places like Hong Kong, Taiwan and Singapore. And they've got sales decks there that include Sullivan's Cove whiskey. They've only just set those up this year, so it's very early days, but they are starting to sell spirits, bottled spirits, and barrels of whiskey as well into those areas. So it's very early days, but we believe that there's a good future there.
Now, I know that there's a really big demand for whiskey in Asia, and you guys are perfectly suited to come up with a sort of a local version.
Well, that's right. It's very true. I mean... I've been looking at some reports just recently, and Taiwan has had, depending on which report you read, somewhere between a 20 and 45% increase in sales or imports of Scotch single malts, and that's not including blends. So there's a huge growth in this region, and particularly in China, that's just exploding at the moment in all sorts of areas. But As their middle class is growing, and it's growing very quickly, the demand for single malt whiskies is growing as well. So we believe we're very well positioned, providing we can produce an excellent product, that we should find a market in China, in Taiwan, Singapore. It's just a matter of us marketing ourselves in those countries.
Are you having fun?
Oh, it's great. It really is. It's nice to be part of something where we're producing something that has its own character. You know, like we're not trying to copy any other whiskey or anything like that. We're well aware that our barley and our water and our methods here will provide a particular style of whiskey, a particular flavour, and we're quite happy with that. All we need to do now is introduce it to what we believe will be our market. And hope that some of that market like it. That is all we can ask, really.
Describe the Sullivan's Cove. If you had to put tasting notes to it, what would you put to it?
Well, it depends which one. If we're getting it from the American oak casks, basically it's fairly light and floral, and quite sweet. And I don't know, it's quite a nice clean whiskey. If we're getting it from the port casks, the French oak port cask, that has a deeper, more chocolatey sort of flavour, and a much darker colour. So the one that we're about to issue, we've got some new packaging coming out now, and we're going to do a double cask, so it'll be a combination of the two. And so that is somewhere in between those two things. So we're taking the accent off the deepness of colour and that sort of chocolatey flavour. We're sort of cutting that back with the American oak version. So from what we've tasted so far and the comments that we're getting from people that we share this with, is that they seem to prefer that style. So that's the way we're going with that.
Now, I almost hesitate to ask this, but if you had to compare it to a Scotch single malt, just for reference purposes, what would you compare it to in terms of region or in terms of brand?
I guess, because we don't use peat in our process, you've got to find a whiskey in Scotland that's a non-peated one, and there's quite a few about. But I guess it'd be more like a Lowlands or... I guess a very lightly peated or non-peated Speyside style of whiskey. So, it's certainly not like a Lagavulin or that style of thing.
As Patrick mentioned, Tasmania Distillery is starting to export Sullivan's Cove, and the distillery is also selling casks of whiskey as well. You'll find more details at the Tasmania Distillery website. There's a link at whiskeycast.com. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. Don't forget, next time around I'll be on the road at Whiskey Live Toronto. My travel plans also include a stop at Whiskey Fest New York on November 6th. If you see me, please be sure to say hello. Of course, my email address for your questions and feedback is comments@whiskeycast.com. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2006, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.